Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast for April 1st, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Topping our news this week, the slammer worm finally slows. The people in South Korea have really gotten hit with this one, looks like.
Yeah, this has been attacking SQL servers all over the place, and people are going around and, of course, closing the ports so that they can stop this attack. But it really hit hard, especially in South Korea initially. Now it has slowed to what they're calling basically an average virus, whereas before it was really hitting hard. And this isn't one of those things that is targeting a consumer PC. No, again, it's targeting the SQL servers. And so it's slowing down internet traffic in general. So you're affected as a consumer, but you're probably not going to be targeted with the virus itself unless you're running a SQL server yourself.
Right. And you want to stay away from things like opening email attachments as usual. You want to do all your normal things. Make sure your Netscape communicator or above is up to date. Make sure Internet Explorer has run all its updates. This doesn't seem to be targeting any particular operating system of Windows or Mac OS 9 right now at any particular level. But like what Ricky was saying is that it seems to be all over the place on the net. So you're going to see congestion, whether you're running, you know, DSL or dial up, no matter what you do.
Well, 802.11g is coming. So, Joe, what does this kind of really mean for us? What can we look forward to here?
So what it means is that you're going to have to upgrade your devices all over again. So if you just recently, you know, got Wi-Fi working in your home, you're going to have to look at leaving B and look at a new standard. Certainly, it's going to be faster. That's kind of neat. That's the great thing. Of course, you know, it depends on where you're going. Some places like, you know, coffee shops and restaurants are just now starting to install Wi-Fi. So Imagine when that's in airports and everywhere else. That might be a bigger deal, but you're going to have to play the whole name game in is this or is that. And if you do, you know, there even is a possibility that if you run a G initially, maybe it doesn't downgrade to a lower level of Wi-Fi. So you may have to be G on both the devices that you're using and the network that you're using. But, you know, the positive side, you're getting some of that faster speed.
There you go. Can't beat that. Linux. Ricky, you know a little bit about Linux. What's up with these legal battles that they're involved in?
Well, it's kind of crazy because it's SCO is involved in this stuff. And SCO has generally been concentrated on Unix, but they are suing IBM and a couple of other people for using code that actually was not attributed to SCO as it should have been. And this becomes kind of more interesting because SCO is a founding member of a group called the United Linux. And the idea is to kind of get Linux on many, many more PCs. And even so, they are in these legal battles, not only with IBM, but a couple of other Linux distros as well. And so the article talks about, is there some friction in the United Linux over this? Well, yes, there may or may not be some friction about these things, and we may or may not be working toward resolutions that will benefit all people. There's a lot of kind of saying nothing at all in this article. The reporter asks some very interesting questions, and they're all deflected in such a way that SCO is basically saying, yeah, we're going to continue to sue these people, and it's probably going to make a lot of people mad. But in the end, we're hoping to kind of raise the question of intellectual property and make some headway in terms of defining that better.
I mean, IBM involved. This shouldn't take very long. I mean, all these lawyers, we'll get some definition out of this. Maybe we'll see, you know, some solidarity in the Linux community. I mean, certainly this lawsuit won't take years and years and years to resolve. And I mean, I think we'll see something definite and radical coming out of this particular lawsuit when it finally, you know, is resolved.
Indeed. Well, if you're curious about Linux from an accessibility perspective, you can check out this article from Yanina Saika. And she essentially goes through the options that are available for Linux as a blind person. Some of you may have already had some experience with Linux or a Linux-like environment. If you have shell accounts, perhaps on your university's server or something like that. But if you want to run Linux on your own, you have a couple of different options. There's Emacs Speak, developed by Dr. T.V. Rahman. And I think we're up to version 17 of that now. It's not access to Linux per se. Rather, it is Emacs is a very, very extensible piece of software. So you can do all of this stuff like streaming radio inside of Emacs. And you can, of course, program inside Emacs, and you can do some command line things by launching a shell from Emacs. So Emacs Speak gives you a lot, but it can get pretty complex. There's also SpeakUp. We're seeing that as an actual shipping part of Red Hat now. So that's very cool.
That is cool.
And the GUI interface is finally about to get some love, I think. The Copernicus screen reader is going to be released in just a bit. So now you're not going to be tied to just the command line. You're going to be able to check out the Linux GUI interface as well on X Windows.
Well, it's funny you should say that because this thing is changing so fast. As Windows 95 starts fading, Microsoft is already talking about .NET and what .NET will hold in the future and what you'll be able to do. We've got an article here that kind of goes into some of the basics of what's going to happen in the .NET framework and what you can expect in later versions of Windows 9X and maybe even Millennium. Certainly, you're going to see these kinds of things start to broaden out as we get closer to Microsoft's next version of Windows, which, you know, should be just a couple of years from now, not that we're going to be able to have a good idea of what ports forward. You never really do with Microsoft, but considering all the issues that are going on with DCM drivers right now in the video chain, it's good that .NET and other things like this are coming up on the horizon.
Absolutely.
Well, if you can see, you might be excited about a new music player that's coming out, a 20-gigabyte iPod. Unfortunately, wow. It's not accessible to us.
No, not so much.
No.
I'm going to be really happy when more MP3 players are available to us because right now there is Rockbox, but I think you're basically just looking at the Arcos jukebox for that.
Memorizing your Nomad.
Yeah there is that. It's disappointing because the iPod is really taking off, apparently. It's easy to use. It has this really sensitive kind of wheel thing on it where you can move your finger around the wheel and move from track to track that way. And they're releasing, you know, iPods with more and more space. And they're just about to bring iTunes, which is currently the way you would manage the iPod's music on the Macintosh platform. They're about to bring that to Windows as well. So this is going somewhere, and I'm kind of disappointed not to be involved in that.
$400 man, for this iPod.
I don't know. If Apple would just be more sensitive to these kinds of accessible issues. I mean, rumor is that the new Jaguar, Jaguar, depending where you live, yes, is coming, you know, later this year, version 10.2. And that doesn't have any real accessibility to it. I mean, we used to have Outspoken and Enlarge, and that was a great pairing. But now it looks like if you're depending on this type of access, in these environments and your company is moving to that, you know, maybe that'll change in 10.3. I don't know. But, you know, in this current cycle of 10.2, I don't see it happening.
And it is disappointing because right now it's all about Windows. And if you're not using Windows, there's Linux or the Mac. And Linux is the only place where we really have some access outside Windows. And I'd love to see what all the hoopla is about the Mac platform, because a lot of people like it.
Yeah. I wish we would have saw more of that at CSUN. Ricky and I just got back from CSUN, and there was a lot of stuff there. But this article actually hits a lot on things we must have missed.
Yeah. Deborah Kendrick, she's always awesome at covering this sort of stuff. And she got to wander around the exhibit halls. Of course, AFB was there doing their own sessions, one of which was an intro to Access World. So she and others were talking about that in a session. She also talks about a few things that she saw, not only from blindness and visual impairment perspective, but from, you know, people who need augmentative communication and that sort of thing. One exciting thing that she did talk about for the blind was the upcoming release of the Victor Reader Vibe. This is a desktop Daisy player. You're going to be able to put your CDs into this and, of course, skip by chapter, navigate by various other heading levels. And this appears to be a really nice device. It looks pretty sleek and compact. You're not obviously going to be able to, you know, take this with you on the bus necessarily, or not easily anyway, but it's still something that's not super heavy and you can carry it around your house and, you know, put it in whatever room you want when you're ready to get some reading done.
Well, the gang at Pulse Data really understands interfaces and how to make all that stuff work. And, you know, if they could just get that down to a smaller device, something that would compete in the MP3 arena. You know, that would really
open
things
up. Wouldn't that be cool if you had this small device and it's like, hey, you could put your music on there. You could have your books on there.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would
be amazing.
Bill McCann was there, a product called Dancing Dots. It allows you to record music and sound like they had a jam session there. So must have had a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Where were we? We missed all that, Ricky.
I know, right?
Speaking of things that are really cool, looks like there's a new note taker, PacMate. Jonathan Mosen did a review of it just recently on Main Menu, and you know, found some things that maybe need to be improved. But
Freedom Scientific are working on that. They did post a story with a link to Mr. Mosen's interview on Main Menu, and they sort of went through the things that he covered and said, yeah, he's right about this thing that he mentioned, but let's keep in mind that this is a pre-production unit, so we're going to see a lot of improvements between right now and the actual release of the device, so that's exciting stuff.
Well, these things always change. I mean, look at this review that we have here next in the show notes that, you know, highlights OpenBook versus Kurzweil. You know, I mean, this is one of the big battles of the decade for sure. I mean, sure, we're only recently into the, you know, new millennium, but this is a battle that I think is for the ages that we have to pay attention to, because this kind of technology isn't getting smaller anytime soon. So we will have to rely on these devices, these big book scanners, to help us. And any improvements there are just going to be amazing for us. But, you know, this gets into the UI versus the way that some of the features are laid out and how fast they work. Do either one of you guys have a dog in this hunt?
I don't have a scanner yet. And, you know, this is something that I think would be useful, but I can't justify the price for one right now. And they're pretty large. I mean, they take up a significant amount of desktop space. And I think if I were a student, say, reading textbooks, that kind of thing, I could justify this. Right now, I just can't, although I am interested to see kind of who wins in this battle and why. How about you, Jamie? Do you use either of these?
I actually do have a scanner, and I am using OpenBook. The thing I'll say is it's pretty discouraging sometimes when you put a book, especially a textbook, that you really need to access, And, you know, the fonts are different. There's lots of graphics. And so that's going to mess with the scan with the OCR. It's mind-numbingly boring to set and scan 450 pages, you know, flip this book over and then flip it over. And then you forget which way you flipped it. And did I turn the page to the right or
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't really tell you that. It's kind of weird. The orientation is an issue. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And you have to do little things like fold a corner down in the book to know that you've done it.
Right.
I'd love to think that, I mean, this stuff has got to exist electronically somewhere. It's not like somebody's sitting there with a typewriter and typing out each copy of a book. I suspect that this stuff is available, and if only we could have access to that kind of thing, to just be able to read it on the PC the way you would with a scanner, but not have to go through all of the work of scanning in the book yourself.
You think we'll ever have all this on one device? Play music, read a book,
whatever.
Man, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I already have enough just trying to remember virtual printer commands for and KES files. I mean, now you're overcomplicating things.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Oh well, you got a dream. Yeah.
There you go. Well, GW Micro has a lot to say on the latest version of Main Menu. You'll see the guys from GW talking with Jeff Bishop on the show. Certainly want to check that out to find out the latest with WindowEyes and VocalEyes and all the great stuff that those guys are doing.
Well, in low vision news, we have this is going to be so cool. I've played with the beta, but I can't talk about that. Well, maybe I will a little. AI Squared is coming out with ZoomText 8.0. And for those of you who've been using 7X, you are going to find some really neat stuff here. It is going to allow you to have some more international versions. You're going to have some updates to work with Windows 98 and XP better. It's just really going to be a fantastic update that I'm looking super duper duper forward to. And we have a link to the show notes. And that has another link to the AI Squared release notes page, where it goes into some huge detail about this upcoming release. I can't say enough about it. Some new voices, new screen model. It is just really, really neat. And if you are a AI Squared fan, you know it takes years between releases, but when they do come out with a release, it is so worth it. So definitely, you got to stay tuned for ZoomText 8.0.
Awesome. Another thing I'm really happy to see updates about, although, are we there yet?
Yeah.
Don't think so, but we're getting closer, and that is GPS solutions for the blind. We have a review here of a product called MobilePal Plus GPS. Darren Burton, Jim Denham, and a couple of other people take a look at this, and apparently Access World did a review sometime last year about this, and MobilePal Plus saw it. This is not something that is built specifically for the blindness community, so I guess it wasn't much of a surprise to find out there were a lot of accessibility issues, but these guys really wanted to work on things, and they said, hey, what can we do to make this more usable for a blind person? So Jim and Darren and a couple other guys take this for a spin. They've got their trusty laptops and hooked up a GPS receiver to those, and then use the MobilePal Plus software to try and get around as a pedestrian using this solution. So definitely check out this article to see what the latest developments are with this.
Fire up your Pine Internet Mail client and send us a message, an email at resources@sarotalk.com. We'd love to hear from you. It's time now for Roundabout. Okay, time to flash forward.
I had the worst dream. I dreamed I went back and...
Oh, wait.
To 2003.
That actually happened. Oh, crap. So those were all stories from the year 2003, and we tried to get them as close to April as we possibly could, so they sounded really authentic. One of the things about Sarah Talk is we like to remind you of how we got from there to here, and these stories help us understand that some arguments still happen. Even they feel new.
Oh, yes.
They feel like, oh, this is the moment. This is the time. I live in the now. And some things like the SEO story, especially that thing.
Yeah, the whole intellectual property thing.
With Linux, no less. That. Wow.
I was getting so into the scanning story, I almost wanted to cry. It's like, I remember this. I really do. Oh, man.
As you were talking, I was remembering, oh, yeah, fold the page down.
And I was remembering not having nearly enough books to keep me satiated at the time, you know, because there were books on cassette.
2 to 3 year waits on NLS?
Yeah. Yes. And you might get some of them out of order, and oh man, it was a nightmare.
Scan no about Audible. 100 pages and then the software crashes.
Your logic crashed 30 or 50 pages in.
Oh man.
Ouch.
DLL error. It's because I ran these two at the same time and I should have put this to sleep. And oh,
yep.
Oh, it, and the DCM issue was a bear. Oh,
yes. Man. I was all excited talking about Linux, of course, because Copernicus, that's just funny, because there was later Orca. And then I like talking about GW because even during that time in 2003, I was still using Vocalize in a DOS box under Windows. And
I was testing Millennium in 2003 on various things because Millennium was still sort of going. Windows ME, for those who might remember.
Oh, yes.
So Pine might have been a little far, although some people were probably still using that.
Oh,
but,
no. Pine was a big thing, especially if you had a shell account. Yeah.
Yeah.
If not, Eudora.
Yeah.
Probably.
Absolutely.
Would have been.
There you go.
Yep.
The scarier thing would have been for me to say, well, you're fine if you're using your Hotmail account on the web.
Yeah.
Which I was. My Hotmail account is extremely old. The weirder thing is the more I pulled these stories with Jamie and Ricky, the more I remembered. And it wasn't very difficult for me to remember just how much we were doing. It is way easier now. I know we say this from time to time, and it's not meant as anything but this, which is, it's amazing to be blind in the year 2013. The conversations we have now, the fights we have now, the fanboy issues we have now, I am thrilled to have them looking back at just where we were 10 years ago.
I mean, one of the CSUN wrap-up things was on cell phones. It's like,
Oh, yeah. Greg Vanderheiden was doing, was it Trace Research? I don't remember, but he was affiliated with somebody, and they were doing, they had developed like 4 phones. None of them were marketed. And we were actually a couple of years away from the Oasis 22C that was done by Yanina Saika and a group in Spain, I think. So this was a big deal then as far as trying to find a way to produce a talking cell phone.
Using a palm. In 2003.
Oh, yeah, but mobile accessibility came out in 2003. The very first version of that ran on the Nokia 3650. And then there was talks for the Nokia Communicator 9210.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
that's,
and those so were true. Early days, and I did not buy either of those things. I didn't have the accessible phone until I had a, I forget, it was a flip phone, and it was running Windows Mobile.
I got
my
first accessible talking phone I got in 2005. I got a secondhand 3650 and bought Tox. Actually, I was given, it was my 21st birthday. That was my big, cool, awesome birthday present, was they bought Tox for me.
Wow, awesome. So cool.
Quickly do the math to figure out how he is now, although I always say there is no math on this show. The Palm thing was hysterical because it was a huge screen. You talk about brick phones. The first Palm screens were huge, and you had the stylus with it.
Yeah, the stylus, yep.
And you had the black and white. It was all monochrome for the most part. And so that way it was easy to see the numbers either under a video magnifier or if I was in the field. And you had handwriting on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Really, what you had was controlled squiggles, but... it's crazy to think about where we were and where we are, especially in the case of Apple. Those Apple stories, by the way, if you go to the show notes, you'll see a lot of these stories that we mentioned. You'll see, it's just funny to think of where we were on a 20 gig, and the guy even breaks it down. That's like $20 a gig.
It's like, yep.
I remember installing iTunes on Windows the first day it came out, and it's like, oh, nope, that's not going to work. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually don't remember. I believe that the Arcos players were accessible with Rockbox in 2003.
Yeah, they were. Only just.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. It was like a really experimental thing at the time.
And that stayed with Arcos forever.
I'm still a fan of Rockbox. I have an iPhone and I have all this other stuff, but I still love Rockbox.
Rockbox is great. I've got it on an River H120 that I think is still alive.
I just sold my River H120.
But
that's an artifact of 2004, by the way.
Let us know your thoughts of what happened 10 years ago and what you were using. Maybe you were using the Victor Vibe from Pulse Data or others. So yeah, definitely let us know.
And you don't even have to use your Pine email browser to do it.
You don't.
And if you
leave
want.
Us an iReport.
Yeah, if you still make
thing
it work.
Called an iPhone or an Android. Yeah. Back in my day, Androids were only on Star Trek.
It was so hard not to mention iBlink Radio. I really was just like, oh, can't talk about that just yet. But now I can tell you, you can, in fact, leave us an iReport on iBlink Radio using your iPhone or your Android device. And we would love for you to do that very thing and give us some memories. Remember, only 3 minutes, unfortunately. That's what you're limited to.
It's actually two now.
It's two.
Somebody dropped it.
Oops. Mm.
Drop a comment on the blog, too, if you want to, sarahtalk.com. You can leave us a blog comment there. We read those on the show as well. Or follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/sarotalk.
Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening, and happy April Fools.
You've been listening to Sarotalk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.